I think it's time we caught up with my guest tonight. This is Ian Lee. Ian, as I say, is currently presenting the late night talk show on talk radio, on digital radio, on the internet. And he's probably this country's finest broadcaster. We're going to start with this track, which is one that Ian often starts his show with. This is The Littlest Oboe.
There's a voice that keeps on calling me down the road. It's where I'll always be. Every stop I make a new friend. Can't stay for long, just turn around and I'm gone again. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on down this road that never seems to end. When new adventure lies just around the bend. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's old style. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow the whole world is my home. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's old style. Down. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. Maybe tomorrow, I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. There's a world that's waiting to unfold. A brand new tale no one has ever told. We've journeyed far, but you know it won't be long. We're almost there and we've paid our fare with a hobo song. Maybe tomorrow, I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's hobo style. Maybe tomorrow I'll find what I call home. Until tomorrow.
That was Maybe Tomorrow, you know, or the theme tune to The Littlest Hobo by Terry Bush. It's also regularly used by my very special guest tonight, Ian Lee.
Hello.
Hello, Ian. It's used at the start of your fantastic late night show on Talk Radio.
Yeah, I can't remember why. I can't remember why we latched onto that. But I've used that for years. I used to use it when I was on Virgin, and I don't know why it kind of became so significant. But yeah, it's a nice jaunty little song.
It is. I was going to ask about it actually. It's one of those for me. It's one of those songs that sort of instantly takes you away to a much better, warmer and kinder place. I think that's one of the reasons why I like it.
I know exactly what you mean. We have a regular caller on the talk radio show who keeps phoning up saying, you know, that's a theme tune to a TV show. Now, of course I know it's a theme tune to a TV show. But every time he phones up, I pretend I don't. I go, no, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, Google it, man. It's a theme tune to a TV show about a dog that goes around solving crimes. And I pretend to Google it, say, no, can't find anything about it. I'm not buying that one. So
I think there's a complete distinct lack of crime-solving dog series on TV at the moment, don't you?
There was the thing is, wasn't there another rival crime-solving dog program at the time? Wasn't there a program with I think it was a Yorkshire Terrier.
I think you're
right.
Yeah.
Called Benji or something.
That's right, it was Benji, yeah. He was a sort of long-haired Yorkshire Terrier, wasn't he?
He was, wasn't he? And it was kind of a rival programme. Imagine that, you know, the zeitgeist being that you need two crime-solving dogs of different stature travelling the world.
Yeah, well, this is what we're lacking in the 21st century, yeah. I think.
Kids these days. They haven't got a clue. They ain't got a clue. They don't know what it's about.
They just don't. You're absolutely right. Ian, you first came to public attention in the late 90s when you co-hosted with Daisy Donovan the 11 o'clock show. Mm. How did you find yourself on that show?
That was the biggest fluke of luck I'd ever had. I was doing stand-up comedy, but was not very good at it and was not making a living out of it. And I ended up, because I had an agent, and he got me a job working at a radio station in Milton Keynes called FM 103 Horizon. And I was Ian in Black Thunder. And what that meant was, during the breakfast show, I would drive around in a black Jeep that was called Black Thunder and would do wacky things. Even though I worked with some brilliant people, I didn't really enjoy the job. I kind of hated it. And as I gave my notice, and on my last week there, someone working in the office came up to me with a fax and said, "Oh, we've just had this fax. Maybe this would be something for you." And it was from Talkback Production Company saying, "We are looking to make a topical comedy show. Have you, we want to audition anybody." And they wanted to audition DJs and comedians and actors and everybody. And so I took this, and I thought, "Oh, yeah, this is quite interesting." And I gave it to my agent, and he said, "No, I've heard about this. I don't think it's right for you. I'm not going to put you up for it." And I went, go put me up for it. He said, no, I'm not going to put you up for it. So I put myself up for it. I got in touch and said, "I'd love to come in and audition for it." And I remember, I was sunbathing. I was sunbathing in some woods in North London somewhere, I don't remember where. And thinking, right, I'm going to go for this. And I was skint, and I was living back at my mum's at the age of 23 or 24, and I was in really, really big debt. I thought, I'm going to go for this, and I won't get this. So when I don't get this, I'm going to give up all ideas of show business for 3, 4, 5 years, and I'm going to get a proper job, and I'm going to make some money, and then we'll see where we are. And I had that attitude as I was going through all the auditions of, I'm not going to get this, I'm not going to get this. And I kept getting further and further and further until they said, they kind of gave me the job of being the idiot that goes out and films stupid little films. And the way I got the presenting job, the first pilot run was presented by Fred McCauley and Brendan Byrne. Mm. And they wanted a third person. And the series started on a Tuesday. And on the Thursday before, I said, "I'll have a go at doing it." And they all kind of went, "Yeah, all right, then we'll film a pilot show with you in." And that was it. It was just a real series of fortuitous twists and the wind blowing in my direction. And that's kind of how I got it, really.
All right. And, there were other people on that show who kind of went on to, sort of, if you like, become household names.
Yeah.
I mean, Ricky Gervais, Sacha Baron Cohen, Mackenzie Crook.
Yep.
How were those guys at that particular time?
Mackenzie I knew really well, and I got Mackenzie in for an audition. Because were we flatmates at that point? I think we might have been flatmates at that point. And so I got him in for an audition, and so that was the coolest thing when they kind of gave him a job as well. I didn't really have much to do with Sacha. He was always quite a separate entity from the studio stuff. But I'd met him a couple of times before doing stand-up. I remember he ran a club in a pizza restaurant somewhere, and I did an open mic spot for him. I remember I did an open mic spot, and he was comparing. And it was back in the day, it was if you did well, then you come back and you'd get a paid gig. And I did my 8 minutes of material, and it went very well. People liked it. And as I came off stage, Sacha went back on stage saying, "Hey, he was great. Who wants to see some more? Yeah, you want to see some more?" And I was thinking, I haven't got any more, man. Don't. And he called me back on for an encore, and I had no material left, and so I died a death. Ricky, I always got on with really, really well. Ricky, there was a real debate as to whether Ricky was going to have a job on there, and I was very much in the camp of being very vocal, saying, "You've got to give this man a job." You know, I used to listen to him on XFM. It was obvious he was something very, very special.
Mm.
And there were a lot of I remember Channel 4 weren't keen on him, but the producers and the writers were keen on him. And it became this real kind of battle. And but he was brilliant, you know, and I got on really well with him. We got quite close during the 11 o'clock show, and, you know, he would just sit in my dressing room and just make me laugh and laugh and laugh. It was relentless, you know. But there were other people that worked on it. There was the guy who was the warm-up man in the studio was Jimmy Carr. We had Robin Ince on it. Yes. Charlie Brooker was a writer for it. You know, so there were all these people that were that went on to huge success in various different fields were working on it. So, yeah, it was incredible, you know, being this 25-year-old kid and being surrounded by all of these people that were obviously very, very talented.
Mm. We're going to play one of your first song choices. You very kindly agreed, Ian, to,
yes.
Choose and talk about some of your favourite songs. And we're going to play the first one now. This is Saturday by Little Jackie. Can you tell us a little bit about this one?
I am convinced there was a young lady who had a hit about 20 years ago called Legend of a Cowgirl, and her name is Imani Coppola. And she had this one big hit and then kind of vanished, but keeps releasing albums. And I am 100% convinced that this woman is a genius. She's an actual bona fide genius. All of her records are completely different. They're generally quite awkward verses, but then these wonderfully triumphant and catchy choruses. And she does a side project with a bloke called Adam Palin, and that is called Little Jackie. And this is just the catchiest song about breaking up with someone ever.
That's brilliant. This is Saturday by Little Jackie.
The music is in trouble and we have to help it out. Now, baby, that's all you need to know about. So why don't you just go on back home?
I never said you couldn't help the music, Imani.
God damn it, woman, I ain't no Imani. I'm Little Jackie. Shit, don't you understand nothing?
Saturday, gray winter weather in the end of May. I watched my lover just walk away. Saturday, I can't recall a Saturday. Are we supposed to take all off and just throw it away? Everything you dislike about me, put it on a piece of paper and throw it away. It's not a good day for a breakup. Sunday blues, yeah, I still haven't got a clue. Break up.
That was Saturday by Little Jackie, which is the first choice of my guest this evening, Ian Lee. Ian, when did you first become interested in music?
Oh, man, well, I was about to say I've always been interested in music, but yes. there might be some people who disagree that what I listen to is music. If anyone has even partly listened to me, they'll know that I'm obsessed with the Monkees, and yes. The Monkees was the big thing for me when I was about 13 years old. I had this battered old album and this single, and I just became obsessed with them. And that's what I tend to do with music, is if I like a band, and it's easier now because you can just go online and do it, but if I like a band, I will have to buy everything they've ever done. And you know, even the rubbish Lost Druggy period as well, I'll buy everything. And so I've just got, you know, I've got hundreds of vinyl albums, hundreds of CDs. You know, I've had to have a big... I'm going to have a big clear out soon now. I'm looking at them. They take up the whole room and try and put some in the loft. But, music is really important to me, you know, and it tends to be a lot of 60s stuff. So the Monkees and the Beach Boys and the Beatles are, the obvious big things. But then you get stuff like Little Jackie, like we just played there, and a big fan of XTC. And I kind of like quirkier stuff. You know, yeah. But I was always out of sync with my friends at school as to what they were liking. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I was a little bit like that, because in the sort of late 70s and 80s, when my friends were into ska and all that kind of cool mod stuff,
yeah,
I was listening to prog rock, you know, which kind of sort of singled me out a little bit as a bit of a weirdo. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I still do quite like prog rock as well, but I love the ska and the mod stuff. Just I was just a little bit late coming to it, I suppose.
Yeah, and so, a lot of the stuff I was shunning when I was younger, I kind of like now. I'm not a musical snob. I think everything is valid, and all forms, apart from Coldplay. Coldplay are the only thing that we don't need. I think everything is up for grabs and is good value.
Absolutely, I can't agree with you more. Really, actually, you told a really good story on one of your shows, one of the earlier shows this year, about the Ray Stevens song. Wonderful 20 minutes, because you kind of held the title back for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Can you just kind of briefly tell us a little bit about the Ray Stevens song, The Streak?
Well, the Ray Stevens song, The Streak, is this ridiculous comedy record from the 70s. I think it may have even been B-side, I'm not totally sure. And streaking was really popular in the 70s. It was a weird time growing up. Everyone was taking their clothes off and running through football pitches and cricket games and stuff. And Ray Stevens kind of capitalised on that and wrote this song. And the show that you're talking about, I was feeling particularly poignant about my dad, who
yes.
passed away a couple of years ago. We had a long period in our lives when we didn't speak to each other. We didn't get on. And then we started to make peace, and then the silly old sod went and got ill and died just as we were kind of making peace. So I have, even now he's dead, I still have a very confusing relationship with my dad, and there is a lot of regret and a lot of bitterness and a little bit of resentment around it. And I don't know why I was thinking about him that day, but I kind of was, and I kind of got thinking about this song. And I didn't know I was going to do, you know, the 20-minute kind of monologue that I did. I knew that I was going to play the song and say, oh, I've been thinking about my dad today, and bizarrely, this is the record that this record takes me back to a particular time. It takes me back to being 5 or 6 when he gave me this song on a single and stuff. But it just kind of came out as this kind of long, ponderous monologue. And I'm really pleased that you brought it up, because it seemed to hit a nerve with a lot of people, and it seems to people enjoyed the story on you know, one level, but then people would then be phoning up telling me their songs or their relationships with their parents or their grandparents that were slightly awkward and perhaps not, you know, in inverted commas, normal, whatever that means. And it's one of the joys, one of the freedoms of doing this, doing a late night radio show as opposed to a show at any other time of the day, is you can do stuff like that. Is that you know, you can go off on flights of fancy and whimsy and talk nonsense, or you can have, you know, an hour of quite heavy, deep, you know, free counselling, you know, because that's kind of what it was. I think I'd been to see my therapist that day, and we'd spoken a lot about my dad, and I think that's why he was kind of heavy. And my dad will come up in the show again, you know. He, I say there's a lot of unresolved issues there, and it's kind of, I find it therapeutic to be able to sit in front of the microphone and talk about that stuff, and I, you know, I've been told it helps a lot of people as well, so... Mm.
Yeah, I mean,
win-win all round.
Yeah,
that might be miserable listening. I don't know. Some people might think, "Oh, it is rubbish. Shut up and get on with it." But you know, that's their trip, man.
Definitely one of the features I think of your show is you know, both your honesty and your openness to talk about such things. And I think you're right. I think you know, it is therapeutic, and I'm sure it does help a lot of people. So if we go back to 1999, you joined XFM. How did you first find yourself in radio? You mentioned earlier that you were working for a radio station before the 11 o'clock show, but how did you kind of find yourself doing the radio thing more kind of regularly?
XFM was weird, right, because I was doing the 11 o'clock show, and suddenly, after being a struggling stand-up and having no money and no one wanting to talk to me, suddenly, when you're on TV, you get a few quid in your pocket, and everyone wants to talk to you. And I went on Claire Sturgis's show, I think it was on a Sunday evening, on XFM, to review music. Mm. And I went on, and I reviewed some music, and I thought nothing of it. I thought, you know, this is a new experience, this is a bit of fun. And then the head of XFM got in touch, and... it was a period when if anybody was on TV, they would instantly be given a radio job because, of course, they're the same jobs. They're not at all. They're completely different skills. But the head of XFM phoned me up and he said, that was great, mate. He was Australian. I won't continue doing the accent for fear of offending anybody. But he said, we'd like you to do a show on XFM. And I went, okay. And that was it. You know, I ended up... unfortunately, I think Claire Sturgis got bumped for a while, which is a shame because I think she's brilliant. She's on Absolute now. And I suddenly was doing this show on XFM on a Sunday evening. And it meant nothing to me at the time. There was, you know, I wasn't doing it as a career move. I was getting paid, but, you know, I was getting paid a lot more on TV. So I went in not caring about it. And I think the first, you know... a lot of it was absolutely rubbish, but there was some kind of freedom about it because I didn't know what radio was. I didn't know the rules of radio, and so I would just go in, and I had a producer called Byron, an Australian chap, and we just messed around, and sometimes he'd tell me off and sometimes he'd push me further, and that was it. And I was at XFM the first time. I got no idea how long I was there for, but a year, maybe a couple of years, I don't know. I know they wanted... The reason I left there the first time is because they wanted me to do the breakfast show. And I had no interest in doing radio as a career. It was a nice hobby. It was a nice Sunday evening slot, and I got paid a couple of hundred quid, which was very handy. And I remember the head of the organisation that owned XFM then was Richard Park, who later went on to own LBC and, of course, was in Fame Academy. And he really was... Looking back, I was stupid not to have taken it, but he kept pressurising me to do the breakfast show, so I don't want to do it. And then they persuaded me to do it for a week to see if I liked it. And afterwards they said, well, that was great, Ian. Do you want to do it now? I said, no, I don't want to do it. It was horrible. And so they let me go because they really wanted me to do breakfast and I didn't want to do breakfast. And blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, the arrogance of youth. I was being offered the breakfast show on XFM. And I went, nah, I don't fancy it. I don't want to do it, you know. And that's how that went. But it was great fun, you know, just messing around. I ended up having a co-host, a bloke called Trevor. His real name was Chris. but he used to just phone up. And I just kept saying, oh, come in the studio, man. Come in and do the show with me. And he ended up coming in. And it was a really weird show. I've got some tapes of it somewhere. I should put them online at some point.
Right. Why would you kind of change your name from Chris to Trevor?
Trevor was an interesting gentleman. He was a Scottish cab driver who wanted to work in radio, and I thought he was hilarious. Not everyone agreed with me. You know, I was in the minority, but I thought he was hilarious. And so he'd come in and do this Trevor character, and it worked. You know, some people heard it, and some people still mention it from time to time. And I think it was most of what I was doing there was rubbish, but there were some gems. And I learned a lot. You know, it was kind of, that was me doing my apprenticeship on radio, really.
Cool. Let's play the second of your music choices, Ian. This is Harry Nilsson's Little Cowboy. Can you tell us a bit about this one?
This is great. I can't believe I am so late to the Harry Nilsson party. Mm. Harry Nilsson's name has popped up because I'm a Monkees fan. He pops up in Monkees lore, and I'm a Beatles fan, and he pops up in Beatles lore. And there's always this name. And I've only ever really known him for the two songs, Without You and... what's the other big Harry Nilsson?
Is it Coconut?
Coconut I'm aware of. let's say that. It wasn't what I was thinking of, but let's say that. And I always thought he was a bit there, a little bit there. But then I read this book about Harry Nilsson. There's a brilliant book by a bloke called Alan Shipton about Harry Nilsson. And I did what I always do when I read a book about someone. I buy the box set, So I bought all of his albums on this box set for £35. And I started going through them chronologically. And flipping heck, man. Those first four albums are just stunning. This voice, he's got the voice of a child.
Yes.
These bizarre chord changes and these wonderful string arrangements. And it's just, whoa, how have I missed these all my life? It's a real revelation. And Little Cowboy is a song that his mum used to sing to him like a lullaby. And he recorded it and put strings to it, and you'll hear it's just, I think it's about 1:58 long or something. Yeah. And it's just absolutely beautiful.
It is. I think what we'll do as well, we might play the sort of 50-second reprise as well, where he's whistling. I think we'll play that as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is Little Cowboy by Harry Nilsson.
Little fella, you're so tired, you can hardly lift your head. But you want to hear a story before you go to bed. So if you'll be quiet and listen patiently, I'll sing you a song that my mother sang to me. Little cowboy, put your saddle in the barn, tie your horse up tight so we'll know no harm. Put your hat and your guns beside you on the chair. Don't forget you got to say a little prayer. Little cowboy, you better hit the Sandman trail or you'll be late for round of time, you know. If you wanna be a cowboy, you better rest a while. Little cowboy baby of the old corral. Little cowboy baby of the old corral.
Was Little Cowboy by Harry Nilsson, which was the second musical choice of our guest this evening, Ian Lee. And we're talking about Ian's career, and he's choosing some music for us to listen to as well. Ian, one of the things I really love about your show, and I love the same thing about Danny Baker's show, is that you never actually quite know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And this is why it is so compelling. I mean, we kind of alluded to it earlier. And, you know, it is one of the reasons why it is so compelling and enjoyable. Is that your intention, or was that your intention when you kind of, you know, started, if you like?
Yeah, it's certainly the intention now, and I don't know at what point it became my intention. But I'm basically, my idea when I'm making radio shows or creating podcasts or making things, it's always to try and make the show that I would listen to. And this is the show, this is as close to the show I would listen to as I could make, apart from the irritating idiot that presents it. I never know what's going to happen. You know, I know if we have a guest, I know that we're going to speak to, you know, like Dean from Jan and Dean for half an hour.
Yes.
Or we're going to speak to the lead singer from the Archies for half an hour. And that's all I know. That's it. The rest of it is kind of up for grabs. I'll have a few stories written down from the papers that I've spotted in case we get a bit dry. And the rest of it is entirely up for grabs. It can go anywhere. I used to work at BBC WM in the West Midlands. Mm. And my boss there really liked me. And then a new boss took over. And the first meeting I had with her, she said, "Ian, your show scares me. It's so dangerous." And I went, it's not dangerous. I think, I'm not going to say anything that's going to be libelous. I'm not going to break any Ofcom rules. I've got kids and I've got a mortgage. It's not dangerous. And what she meant by dangerous was, the show was at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. And at 10 to 2, I would go down to the studio. And she would say, "What's on the show today?" And I would reply, "Oh, I don't know. We'll see what happens." And she, in her old-fashioned BBC way, considered that to be incredibly dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. It was a two-hour show, and I played music, and it was easy. I would turn the microphones up, and something, you know, something would hit me, and that would be the show. And I like that. I like the spontaneity of it. I like the fact that it can be completely random. I like that it's dictated somewhat by the callers and what they say, and we can go off on all kinds of tangents. Now, it doesn't always work. I think that's pretty brilliant as well, because everything these days is so perfect and so smooth, and we're not allowed to fail anymore, certainly not allowed to fail in public. I don't mind failing in public. I don't mind if the show is a bit ropey. I'll learn from it, you know, and quite often listeners like it when it is a little bit ropey. It's a little bit trickier on talk radio, because it's 3 hours, there is not, apart from the odd song I play, there's no music, there's no travel. So it's pretty much 3 hours of me.
Mm.
And because it's a new station, and because there hasn't been that much publicity about it, we don't have as wide a pool of callers as I would like.
Mm.
So we quite often get the same voices on, and this isn't a criticism of any of those people. All of my callers are welcome. I love them all.
Yes.
But it will be interesting to see how the show is in a year's time, when we have a much bigger audience and a much bigger group of people that are calling in, because then I'll have, you know, more colours on my palette to play with.
Mm, definitely. I think one of the problems with radio today and the media generally is that much of it is too safe and predictable.
Yeah.
You had a really interesting and enjoyable conversation with Danny Baker, I think, on your show.
Mm.
I should say at this point that Ian is presently presenting a late night talk show on talk radio from 10 till 1.
Yes.
I just thought I'd mention that now.
Thank you very much. That's appreciated. We need all the help we can get.
No problem. And going back to the conversation you had with Danny, and he was talking about how radio cannot be, I think he said, generic or homogenised. And I kind of agree with that, you know.
Radio's safe and boring, you know. And that's it. It's bland is the new black. The middle ground is the way forward, you know. And apart from a very few exceptions, and I put people like James O'Brien and Nick Abbott and Danny and maybe one or two others, it's boring, you know. I mean, I listen to a lot of Radio 4 at the moment, because that's the only place where there's any kind of hint of danger and excitement. And it's safe, and it's boring, and it's bland. And you know, I've come under the wrath of bosses who've found my shows too excessive or too I don't know what they found it. You know, I'm not breaking any laws, and I'm not breaking any rules. But there's nothing really that is a must listen at the moment, you know, unfortunately, which is a real shame.
When I was growing up, and I was a huge radio fan, and still am, you know, the shows I were listening to were, it was Martin Kellner on Radio Air. I mean, he was a huge kind of early influence on me, if you like. And, you know, Martin was also treated shabbily by the BBC. He was recently...
read Martin Kellner's blog about his treatment at the hands of the BBC. It's a cracking and depressing read, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, what a waste, you know. I mean, honestly, I don't think they realised at Radio Leeds just, you know, the wonderful...
They don't care.
No.
And they don't understand something that doesn't fit into their little box.
Mm.
And BBC Local Radio is terrified because there's, you know, I strongly believe that it, in 10 years' time it will be unrecognisable from what it is now. It'll be half of what it is.
Mm.
But they don't care about, you know, people being different and being creative. And Martin Kellner's been doing it for years, and he's, you know, the safer pair of hands you couldn't find. But he's not your normal radio presenter.
Yeah.
And that frightens people. You know, I mentioned the boss that said that she thought my show was dangerous. Come on, man, grow up, because it's not dangerous. Same as Kellner's not dangerous. But yeah. They don't like stuff that is outside of... well, we've got Doris from Luton. And Doris, I believe you've lost your dog. I remember when I was at the local radio, BBC Local Radio, and they always wanted me to do lost pets. We got a phone call from someone who's lost their parakeet. It might be a fun phone-in. I mean, it won't be a fun phone-in. It'll be rubbish. It'll be some bloke talking for 10 minutes about how he's lost his parakeet and people phoning in saying they think they might have spotted it. And that's what they want on BBC Local Radio. Well, you know what, guys? You can have that.
Yes.
And because of that, you will be dead in 10 years. And there are some brilliant people on local radio. You know, I'm not knocking all of it.
No.
There's a guy called Toby Foster who is absolutely cracking. There's Jonathan Vernon Smith, who I used to work with, who's brilliant. But I do wonder, and they're both slightly, you know, out of the box. I do wonder how they'll be, you know, perceived in a couple of years' time.
Yeah. Let's go on to your third musical choice.
Yes.
And I'm really glad you chose this one. This is Daydream Believer by the Monkees. You're a huge Monkees fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am a huge Monkees fan. I've started my own record label, 7A Records, with my friend Glenn.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah.
Actual pop proper records and CDs, albums and stuff. It's incredible. The kind of Monkees obscure 70s stuff that they've released and or recorded and didn't release. And so I am obsessed with the Monkees. This, for me, is the most perfect song of all time. And I kind of mentioned this on my radio from time to time. Dear listener, you will have heard this song 100 times, 1,000,000 times, okay? You're thinking, oh, Daydream Believer. But, if you can, sit down, close your eyes, and imagine this is the first time you've ever heard this song. You've never heard it before. And listen to it. Really listen to it. Listen to the spoken bit at the start. Listen to the piano intro. Listen to the horns. Listen to that joyous chorus when the harmonies come in. And just try and absorb it as though it's the first time you've ever heard this. This is a pop masterpiece.
Absolutely. Here it is. This is Daydream Believer by the Monkees.
7A. What number is this, chap?
7A.
Okay, not me. Don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
Could hide neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Steed. Now you know how happy.
That was Daydream Believer by the Monkees, which was the third musical choice of our guest this evening, Ian Lee from Talk Radio. Ian, you mentioned before we played the track that you have a record label with your friend Glenn.
Yes.
This is 7A Records. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I can. Like I say, when I get into music, I don't do things by halves, and I've been obsessed with the Monkees for years. And how did it come about? Gosh, it's such a weird story. In the mid-70s, Mickey Dolan from the Monkees recorded a load of singles, and nothing ever happened with them. They were just singles that you have to go and, you know, spend 20 quid buying a single on eBay or going to record fairs. And for a long time, I thought, hey, wouldn't it be nice if all of these singles were on an album? And I was kind of bored a couple of years ago, and so I started looking into it. And I run this Monkees page on Facebook, and I started talking to some people on there, and I, through a bit of detective work, found out all these songs were recorded on different labels, and I found out that they were now all owned by Universal, I think it is, yeah. And so I started emailing Universal, and I kept getting bounced around. They said, no, you need to speak to this guy in this department. No, you need to speak to this guy in America. And bounce around, until I found someone who could help me. And I said, right, can you confirm you own all of these songs? And this went on for months and months and months and months, and eventually it came back. They said, yes, we own these songs, and we'd be happy to license them to you. And then I thought, blimey, I don't know what that means or how I do that. So I went on my Facebook page and said, guys, I need some help. I found out that Universal owns all of these songs. They're prepared to license them to me. Can anybody help? And then this guy, Glenn, who lives in England, sent me an email saying, Ian, I've been watching your project for, it was about a year by then, and he says, I'm really impressed with what you've done. I run a record label. I don't think this release would work on there, but why don't I draw up a draft contract for licensing? If they agree with it, we can start a record label. And I was like, yeah, sure, okay, fine, whatever. And he drew up this contract, and we sent it off, and Universal agreed to it, and we sent them a cheque for a couple of £1,000, and suddenly we had the rights to these songs. And it was that simple, and then we just called in favours. I got a mate to make a logo, my friend Scott Balcony, and I got him to design an album cover. I got someone else to write some sleeve notes. We approached Henry Diltz, who is one of the most famous rock photographers of all time. He took the cover of the first Crosby, Stills and Nash album and Morrison Hotel and all of these. And he'd taken loads of pictures of the Monkees, and we said, Henry, we've got no money. Can we have some of your pictures? And he very kindly went through his vaults and sent us loads of pictures for a nominal sum. And suddenly we had a record, and it did really well. We sold about 1,500 copies of this album, and I went on front row on Radio 4, and it became quite big news around the world, and we were interviewed on, you know, American radio and stuff like this. And it became a thing. And since then, we've kind of, it was always just going to be that one record, but we got so carried away and so excited, and it paid for itself eventually. We made back the money on it, that we started doing other bits and pieces, and we've done more Mickey Dolenz releases. We've done a Bobby Hart release, who wrote some songs for the Monkees, and we've got the album, the first album, the Mickey Dolenz, the MGM singles, that's coming out on CD in October with, I think we've got 12 bonus tracks on there, and again, it's that thing I said about the radio show. I'm making records that I would buy.
Yes.
And that's it. And we're throwing as much free stuff in there as we can, extra tracks and sleeve notes and booklets and, you know, really swish packaging that costs us a fortune and we don't make money on it. But generally, one project will then go on to fund the next project. And, it's brilliant. The best fun, man. I can swan around smoking cigars saying I run a record label. Yeah. So it's great fun.
Yeah, what you said mirrors quite a lot of what Johnny Trunk from Trunk Records, I interviewed him a year or so ago, and that was why he started Trunk Records, because there was all this music out there that wasn't available, and you know, it was all obviously library and soundtrack kind of stuff, and then he kind of branched out into jazz and folk and all kinds of things.
It's not that difficult. The two trickiest bits are drawing up a license agreement, but luckily Glenn does that, and I bet there are templates online for what you do. Offering money that you think is fair, and the other hard bit is kind of distribution. But, you know, because Glenn works with a record company, they have distribution, so we kind of piggyback on the back of them. But you can do it yourself. You know, you can set up your own online shop. If it's going to be a real small, low-budget affair, you can do that. Mm. Or you can contact distributors, or you can contact Amazon yourself, you know. So it's all doable, you know, and it's not... This hasn't happened because I used to be on the telly or because I'm on the radio. This happened because I run a geeky Facebook page, and I got lucky, you know, and that's all it is. Anyone can do this. I would urge anyone that's got an interest in fringe music, you know, or stuff that is really old and isn't out there, do it, man. You know, it's incredibly satisfying to do.
Absolutely. Ian, what are you listening to at the moment, musically?
I am listening. I'm listening to a lot of the Beatles at the moment. I've never owned, bizarrely, I love the Beatles, I've never owned the anthology CDs.
Right.
So I've made up for that, and I've been listening to those. And I went and there's a lot of Beatles fever in the air with the new Ron Howard film coming out. And a couple of nights ago, I went and saw at some of the cinemas when they show the Ron Howard film. They're also going to show an edited version of the Beatles live at Shea Stadium. And I went and saw that. On Monday, I think it was, and Giles Martin, George Martin's son, was there, and he gave a little speech about how he'd, you know, remixed the sound and stuff. And afterwards, I went and said, Giles, just want to say, brilliant work, thanks, man, really enjoyed it. And he said, oh, thanks very much. And then I tweeted him, saying, Giles, just again, want to say thanks very much. And he replied, now, this may have been him being really polite, right, and Googling me, but he replied, no problem, Ian. Always been a fan since the 11 o'clock show. It was nice to meet you. This is Giles Martin.
What a lovely
Martin
thing to hear.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So I charged my arm. I said, well, Giles, do you fancy coming on the show one night? He went, I'd love to. Then he started following me on Twitter. Then we started DMing each other. Long and short of it is, there is a very strong chance I might be going to Abbey Road to interview Giles Martin. Now, as a Beatles fan, this is just... the sexiest thing, you know, short of Paul McCartney inviting you around for a cup of tea and a bacon sandwich. It wouldn't be bacon, it'd be fake and bacon. But this is the sexiest thing that's ever happened. I'm on a massive Beatles tip at the moment. And Imani Coppola, I'm constantly finding new Imani Coppola stuff that I haven't heard. So that's where I am at the moment.
Recommend a band to you, if you remember. They're called the Lemon Twigs. Have you heard of them?
I've not heard of those. No, I'm always up for new bands.
Yeah, they're a couple of lads, actually. They're American, I think, from New York. One's 17 and one's 19. And they're just producing this amazing kind of 60s-influenced pop music that's really interesting. And it's, you know, beautifully kind of played and everything. There's a track called These Words... you know, if you get a chance today, do have a listen to it.
I'm checking it out. That's what I'm going to do straight after this.
I think you'll like it. And, you know, it's amazing to think these are just basically kids, you know. But very, very gifted lads. So there we go. Would you like to do a music show, like a more regular kind of...
Yeah, I would. I'd love to do a music show, but it would have to be one where I can play what I want. That's the thing. I couldn't go in and do a playlist show. It would have to be one where I can sit down with my iPod and go, oh, this. I forgot about this.
Oh gosh, yeah. That's one of the beauties of my show, actually, is that I can play what I want. You know,
and what a joy that is.
Oh, it really is.
If anyone's ever worked in playlist radio, coming up next is Robbie Williams and Candy. Oh God, the joy of being able to play what you want to play is wonderful.
Yeah, that's one of the beauties of you know, community radio, if you like. You know, we only really have to play the kind of charty, playlisty stuff on the breakfast show, you know, which I don't do. So that's good. I kind of try and avoid that. There we go. Ian, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, man. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you as well. And, you know, just to say to listeners again that Ian's show is fantastic, and it is on Talk Radio, which I think is a digital station at the moment.
It's on digital. It's on talkradio.co.uk. It's on DAB. You can get an app. If you don't fancy, you know, if you don't fancy staying up until 10 o'clock, you can download the podcast. If you go to iTunes or your usual podcast provider and type in Ian Lee and Talk Radio, it'll pop up, and you're all very, very welcome to phone in and you know, mess around.
Yeah, and you do feature some great interviews. Am I right in thinking, Ian, that you're interviewing possibly tonight Mike Love?
Yeah. Yeah, although just before the show, I was getting emails from the PR people for his new book saying, would you be able to interview Mike Love at 4:15 today, on Pacific Standard Time, which is 12:15 our time? Mm. I was like, yep. And they said, how long would you want him for? 30 minutes? But then the email trail has gone cold. So hopefully there is a chance, you know, and again, this is the beauty of the Unplanned Show. There is a chance that one of my absolute heroes might be on the show tonight or not. Yeah. We don't know. We'll find out later.
Absolutely. People should, tune in and find out. So, Ian, as I say, thank you very much indeed for your time this evening. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And we're going to finish with your fourth musical choice, which is Senses Working Overtime by XTC.
Andy Partridge and XTC, the great lost British band. Why that band are not, you know, bigger than U2, I will never know. I just think all of their songs, Andy's in particular, are just mini masterpieces. And Senses Working Overtime, I remember this came out, I guess, about 82, 83, so I was about 10. And I was, it scared the life out of me as a 10-year-old. I found it terrifying, this imagery and, you know, the world's a biscuit and stuff. Oh, God, it was terrifying, but I love it. I think it's just such a good song.
It certainly is. And he kind of wrote it, didn't he? Because he was playing around with the song. Was it Manfred Mann 5-4-3-2-1 or something?
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that true?
I think so, yeah. It's in his book. You know,
I've not got that far in the book yet. I dip in and out of that book. Oh, that's brilliant. How funny. Good
yeah, thing. He does that quite regularly. He's just sort of messing around with other songs I think that's how that one started.
Just kind of, he's brilliant. He's one of Britain's greatest songwriters, one of the world's greatest songwriters, and I love him. I love the man.
Certainly is. Thanks, Ian, and you take care of yourself, and good luck with the show and everything else you do.
Thanks for letting me chat. I really appreciate it, and goodbye to all of your listeners in Radioland.
Bless you. Thank you. You take care.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. That was XTC and Senses Working Overtime. Huge thanks to Ian Lee for his time. What a lovely guy he is. And as we said during the show, if you do want to listen to his late night talk show on Talk Radio, it's on, as I say, Talk Radio, on digital radio, and I think on the internet as well. Next month, as we said, there isn't a different sound show, but there is sort of a Anjardi special. Ange and Lucas Drinkwater are coming in, and it's going to be part of the Soundcheck show, and it's going to be all singing and all dancing, and it's going to be streamed and televised and all kinds of things. So it's going to be pretty special, and I think that's on the 18th of November at 9 o'clock. But I'm sure if you look on social media, there'll be lots of sort of information about that before that.